So I'm new to the art world. And in this podcast, I have gathered the things that have surprised me the most. And I have to say, the art world is it's a place like I've never seen a place before. It's amazing, it's colorful, it's exciting, it's confusing. It's secretive. It's a lot of things. I want to know how things really work. I want to know the secrets. I want to know the taboos, the business side of it, the power struggle. And especially, I want to understand the things that you can't read anywhere, that people are not talking about. But without further ado, here are my seven most surprising things that I've learned about the art world as a newcomer. Number one, in the art world, the artist is not the most important brand. I assumed when I got into the art world that the artist was the most important figure, the most important person, the star basically of the show at all times, because it is the art world, right? It's about art. Who makes the art? That's the artist, right? So I had assumed, right, that the towering presence, the biggest personalities, the biggest brands, the most important people were the artists. And you know, for a long time, I was an outsider. I didn't particularly care about the art world. So the only things that came to me were the biggest stories, right? So I had heard of Damien Hirst and Jeff Koons. So to me, they were representative of what the art world generally looked like. So I thought, okay, the artists are running the show. But actually, when I got into it, I learned that that's generally actually not the case. Because there are, I would say, a number of brands in the art world that come before the artist generally. So examples of important brands in the art world. Well, the galleries are extremely important as a brand. And in a lot of cases, people actually know the brand of the gallery, but they don't necessarily know the artists that the gallery represents. So let me give you an example. So I attended an art show. The owner was exhibiting her artworks to the world. And my wife and I, we were there and we saw a piece we really liked, and we asked about what. You know, what is this piece? We didn't know about the artist. We didn't know the piece. And she told us the first thing she told us was which gallery she had purchased this piece from, right? So I thought, well, that's quite interesting. She didn't tell us about the artist or the work itself, but she mentioned the gallery. And that was so interesting to me because I was, okay, here's a new dynamic to me, which is that the gallery can actually be a brand which can be, you know, more important than the artist itself. You might say that for an artist starting out, that artist is nothing before the artist get represented by a branded gallery. But there are also other brands in the art world, and I've learned that collectors can be extremely important brands in of itself. So the classic example is the British collector Charles Saatchi, and he has been doing some really interesting things over many years, but I would say a strategy of his has been at some points, at least, to buy a lot of works of very young artists. And then, solely because Charles Saatchi, were investing and were purchasing these works, the works became interesting. The artists became interesting, right? And that was kind of a, I would say, a backwards dynamic for me. It was like, ah, okay. Well, actually, the right collector can also make the name of an artist rather than the other way around. So collectors can also be important brands in the, and I've learned later that it's very important who owns the art of an artist. And actually, gallerists are very particular about who they sell to, because they know that the collector's name is really important for, I would say, for the market of a given artist. Other examples of important brands in the art world is museums. It matters a lot which museums artists have exhibited at, and that can also contribute to the making of an artist's career or the development of an artist's career. And the last type of brand I want to mention is the art fairs. So there are a couple of, there are a lot of art fairs now, but there are like a handful with a really well-known brand. And I would say, to me, Art Basel are the most important ones. It's held in Basel in Switzerland, but also in Miami, which is called Art Basel Miami, and also in Hong Kong. So it's very important for galleries to be able to attend art fairs and actually to be allowed into the right art fairs. It's also important for collectors to be able to say, well, I bought a work at Art Basel, because that's kind of I've learned that it functions as a stamp of approval of sorts. So I would say the first thing I learned is, overall, in the art world, the artist is not the most important brand. And that has actually been quite surprising for me to learn. Number two, in the art world, public museums are surprisingly commercial. So I didn't know anything about the particular role of art museums, of public art museums, when I entered the art world. I've been to museums as a spectator, and I think I kind of superficially thought that museums kind of only focused on art and, I would say, the public good. And they also do, but it's much more nuanced than that. So I'm just going to talk about one, I would say, role that the public museums play in the art world. And I would say a really surprising role, which is quite commercial, is actually then that when an artist has exhibited at the right museums, that in of itself is extremely important for the career of the artist. And also for the collectors that own the art of a particular artist, but also the gallery or galleries that are representing that artist. So all of a sudden, which is quite interesting, there are a number of players for whom it matters a lot financially and in other ways, where an artist, at which museum and which kind of exhibition an artist will have at a particular museum. And that's quite kind of interesting, right? Because if you look at it, the interests of the museum is, you know, they're not directly commercially involved in this game, you might say. I would say, from the perspective of the museum, it's important to, I would say, raise and secure the funds, but it's also important to stage the right kind of exhibitions to draw in, I would say, a lot of visitors to the museum. But in an indirect way, they contribute a lot commercially to the interests of a number of other players in the art world, which has been kind of quite surprising for me to learn about. Okay, number three. In the art world, it's hard to tell the difference between genius and fraud. And let me clarify what I mean. So I think the art world is probably the most subjective field that I've ever been exposed to. So in other fields, you know, other fields tends to be more objective, right? Well, in math, 2 + 2 = 4, and you can prove things. In sports, for instance, you can see who scores a lot of goals. In football, that's a great player, right? But in the art world, and with art in general, it doesn't function in the same way, because consider this question: who is the greatest artist in the world, right? It doesn't make sense to ask that question. Well, it's asked a lot because people want a hierarchy, I guess, right? So how do you measure that, right? Well, one way is to say, to look at financial factors and say, which artist sells her or his works for the most money? Who is the most recognized, the most well exhibited, and so on? And I think all of this subjectivity, right, it kind of means that it's possible to, I would say, either to game the system, or that the system develops in peculiar ways, right? And what I find so fascinating is that it's been shown again and again that it's actually impossible to tell the difference. For somebody that doesn't know the context, it's impossible to tell the difference between a very cheap piece of art and an extremely expensive piece of art. You can't tell the difference by simply looking at the art, because art is not objective. You can't say, oh, this is the best artist. I'm not saying maybe at some point it was more fashionable to be an artist with a lot of great technical skill, right? So who was the best painter? Who was the best sculptor? But the way that contemporary art has evolved, it's not only about skill anymore, or the skill is not, it's not so much technical skill anymore, because right now there are I would say it's not unusual for artists actually to have other people help, like, creating and producing their actual artwork. So what I want to say with all of this is that this is an extremely subjective world, and because it's subjective, people look to markers of authority, I would say, to voices of authority or systems to evaluate whether art is good or not. And in that kind of world, sometimes I think it's possible for something to be regarded as genius, but in another world, it could have gone the other way, right? And be regarded as nothing. And I think that's extremely interesting, because it's easy, I would say, after the fact, once somebody has become really recognized and has had a lot of exhibitions and a great market for his or her art, right, to say, okay, well, that's a great artist because everybody else thinks so, and because now I'm at the Guggenheim or at the MoMA and this person is exhibited and he's a, you know, there's been some great auction results right now. But is it really the best or great? I think that's an open question. But this kind of subjectivity means that actually sometimes it's difficult to tell the difference between genius and fraud. Okay, number 4. In the art world, patience trumps risk-taking. So what I want to say, to touch on here, that when I came into the art world, I thought art was about, or only about, freedom, no rules, it's open, anybody can do it, and it's for the rebels, it's for the risk-takers, right? And maybe it also is. But I've also noticed a dynamic which reminds me of the world of law. And the world of law is quite conservative. And it's not really about risk-taking. No, it's about thinking long-term. It's about being patient, taking a step back and evaluating the situation and let, you know, things happen instead of influencing things. And I've kind of noticed the same dynamic in the art world, which is actually quite a bit more conservative than I would have thought. And you can say, okay, well, at the grassroots level of art, things are more experimental, wilder, it's more diverse. But as you gradually move up and money begins to play a role, you know, you kind of throw things in the mix that makes the whole system remarkably more conservative than I would have thought initially. So I've noticed that there is a lot of people who are actually, I would say, more afraid of doing things wrong than, you know, taking risks and creating things. And to my surprise, this actually also applies to a lot of artists. And not all, of course, but there are a lot of artists that, you know, afraid of making the wrong move or breaking an unwritten rule. If you start exhibiting with this gallery, does that close any doors higher up later on? If I do this kind of art, will that close any doors for me? In general, I've noticed that risk aversion, don't want to take risks, that's quite common actually in the art world, and that has surprised me quite a bit. Number five, in the art world, exclusion is more important than inclusion. So this sounds like some kind of political statement on my part, and it's really not. It has really surprised me how important exclusion is in the art world. So there are so many gatekeepers, and their job is to say no to most of people and yes to a very few, I would say, select group of people. So for instance, it's very common that artists have to apply for a lot of things, for art residencies, which are, I would say, extended stays where an artist goes somewhere and make art. Artists also commonly apply for grants. Artists also queue up to get exhibited at museums and get admitted into the right galleries, get admitted into the right group shows. So it's rather the norm that people get excluded rather than included. And when I look at it in a, like, from a broader perspective, I think in the art world, like, exclusion is a very common way of creating value. And a word that's often used is curating, which is, I would say, a nicer way of saying that some things are chosen. And of course, whenever you choose something, there's something else that you cannot choose. So I would say a lot of artists, they believe in inclusion, which is the idea to invite people and that people are welcome to join and maybe that everybody are welcome to join. But I would say, as a general rule, that's not the way that the art world works. Exclusion is more important than inclusion in the art world. Number six, in the art world, context is king, not content. So context is king, not content. What do I mean by that? Well, the context basically is everything that, you know, the surrounds the art, but is not the art. And the content is the art. So why is the context more important than the content? Isn't everything about the art? Isn't the art, doesn't it lie in the name, the art world, that is about the art? Well, I think, yeah. Initially, it is. But it seems to me that there are so many layers around it that have actually become, you know, we've gotten to the place where these layers, this entire context, oftentimes means more than the art. So what's the context? Well, the context is where artwork is exhibited. It's who has owned the artworks. It is which auction houses sell the artworks. If you look at art from the perspective of the artist, the art is everything for the artist, and it should be like that. But once an artist moves out of his or her studio and tries to show the art to the world, in a weird way, there's a lot of other factors that become more important than the art itself, and that has surprised me. Number 7, in the art world, art is rarely a good investment. I had, you know, I would say general media exposure to huge auction results where works of art were sold for like bigger and bigger amounts of money. So I thought I had like a naive, I would say, assumption that you could go from rags to riches as an artist. Once you get discovered, right, maybe if you were lucky, they will sell for millions. That was kind of my naive assumption, I think. But once I've gotten to know more, I understand that that's not the case at all. So it doesn't really happen that an artwork goes from worthless to worth millions of millions and millions. That's not the way it works. So what does that mean? Well, it means buying, unless you're Charles Saatchi, a branded collector, buying art from unproven artists, young artists, that's very risky. When we consider the art as an investment, it's very difficult to know whether it's going to be a market for young artist art later. And if you look at the numbers, most of the art of emerging artists doesn't have the same resale value in 10, 20, 30 years. Does that mean that art cannot be a good investment? No, it definitely can be a good investment. Generally, that means that either you have to have some kind of competitive advantage, I would say, a brand name as a collector. That's a way. Another way is also to buy more expensive things that already are in the millions of dollars and banking basically on that the value will go up from there even more in the future. So that has surprised me that in the art world, art is rarely a good investment. So that was my 7 most surprising things that I've learned about the art world as a newcomer.